Family Pictures, now at Blackfish Gallery. Up after that, at 12 o'clock, we'll have Buscando America until 1:30. From 1:30 to 2:30, we have Fa Radio. And then from 2:30 to 4, it's Radio Tonale. After that, we have Democracy Now! In the afternoon, followed by the independently produced weekly KBOO News. That's something here that we do and only we do, and no one can do it quite like we do. And if we have programming that does something wonderful for you or speaks to your heart, please consider making a donation. KBOO keeps you informed and you can get involved. You could come down here and volunteer, or you can go to kboo.fm and click on donate to become a member. You can do it today, or you can do it as a gift to somebody that you love. A wonderful alternative and a very sustainable way of making a difference this holiday season and giving a gift to those in your immediate circle or those further out. Thanks for listening to KBOO, and here we go with Art Focus.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Hand him on now, whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Ellen Goldschmidt. Her show, Hot Lava Family Pictures, is on now at the Blackfish Gallery on 9th Avenue through December the 30th. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Ellen.
It's fun to be here.
So your show just opened last night. You had all the excitement of a first Thursday. These pictures are mostly acrylic on board. There are some drawings, and they're all based on old family photos. So you got the old boxes out, went through them, and this was a whole sequence you've done.
Yes.
Departure from your normal work. What were you thinking when you pulled out these photos?
I've looked at these photo albums over the years, many times, obviously. It's something nice about photo albums that young people probably will never experience. You can kind of go back and revisit your childhood. And one of the things I noticed was that each time I would look at them with some years in interspersed, I'd have a different feeling about the pictures that I was seeing and a different feeling about myself and my family members and what was going on there. I think having reached the ripe old age of 60, I had some new insights and was able to see those pictures differently than I'd seen before, and particularly the interaction between the family members, between myself and my sister and my mother and father. I saw something different there that I wanted to explore.
Mm-hmm. The name of the show is Hot Lava.
Right.
What is hot lava in this context?
It kind of came to me midway through working on these pieces that that was a good metaphor for the feeling of living in my family, that there was a lot of volatility and some danger, you know, that I felt as a child, and that you're kind of always hopping away from. My son, who's now 29, used to play a game called Hot Lava.
Mm-hmm. You know what? My son still plays Hot Lava.
Yes.
He's 11 at school.
It's something that really resonates with kids. You know, it's like almost like a fairy tale, how children deal with the idea of danger. That's why.
That's where the name comes from. One of the first pictures, as you go into Blackfish, you have the front half of the gallery. And on the left side, there's a picture called Essential Male. So all these pictures are figurative,
yes.
And you cover up people, or you erase their faces sometimes, or you don't finish limbs or hands. You know, you can always tell what type of person it is, but there's always this sort of erasure going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing color, right? These were originally black and white.
They were, and they were just very small, 3x3 black and white snapshots.
Oh, right. Really, really small. So Essential Male is actually the postcard image. It's a guy standing on a beach, I think, a sort of a shiny, wet beach with black mountains in the background. And he's holding two kids. And I guess the bigger one is your sister.
Right.
And she's 4 years older than you, so you're pretty much a baby. And then Dad, I presume, is the essential male. His face and his chest are all kind of scratched out, kind of they're pink.
Yeah.
Whereas his legs have a certain shadow to them. They're you can tell they're sort of realistic flesh.
Right.
And the girls' faces are very suggested. They're just sort of blobs. So what was this photo from, or the original picture?
So the original picture is, it's actually not my father, but it's my brother. It's my half-brother who is 15 years older than me. But his actual identity is not so important. I mean, he's a stand-in for a male figure in the family.
So the picture's called Essential Male.
Right. There's a little bit of irony there because, of course, his face is absent. The centrality of the man in the family and yet his kind of absence at the same time. In my family, I grew up in the late 50s, early 60s. Dad was emotionally not very available. He was there, he was central, and he's central to the drama between the two sisters, you know, because the sisters vie for the attention of their father. And very essential in many ways. The virility men are essential, but his emotional unavailability was a sadness for a daughter, for any child, really. Mm-hmm. And so that's speaking to that.
Mm-hmm. This is Portland in the late 50s.
Yeah, grew up in Portland.
Which part of Portland?
Near Reed College. My father taught at Reed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's right.
So
what did he teach?
He taught political science, political theory. He was a big intellectual. You know, his life was in the mind. It wasn't in the emotions, if you want to split those two.
Right. And your mom was a homemaker, but was also very intellectual.
Well, she was actually a social worker. She had a career as well.
Oh, okay.
She represented the emotional spectrum in the family, and it was very hot. He was the balance to that. It really was split. It created a split in me in a way.
So then you have a picture next to it called Puppetry. There are two puppetries in this show, but this is the painting puppetry. And it's you and your sister, and your mom is behind you, holding you.
Right.
And your hands are out. And then there's a shadowy figure in the top left.
Yes.
Who may or may be a sort of absent father.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about your mom and how she comes across in this picture.
Okay. She's holding one of my hands and my sister's holding the other. She's kind of looming over both of us, and her face is far forward and a bit exaggerated in size. And she's actually smiling, or has a pleasant expression. It's not a fearful expression. I think all three of the figures, their skin colors are not natural. Like hers, maybe the mother's is a bit green. I think mine is a bit green, and then my sister's a bit blue. So there's kind of an expressionism in the use of color. But I'm kind of the central figure, but I'm being manipulated. The small child, who is actually me, is being manipulated by these other two female figures.
Right. So you took that as a metaphor for, or a symbol of, the relationship over your childhood, right? You felt like you were in the middle between two strong women, or two women?
Yes, in a way. They took up a lot of emotional room, a lot of room, period. They were strong and kind of demanding, both of them. And so there wasn't too much oxygen left for me. I mean, you know, I adapted to that, as children do. But I think it left me feeling kind of unseen. My sister, who was the older in this pair of rivalrous sisters, I think she felt that way too. That was a problem in our family. I don't think my mother was great at seeing us for who we were, which is what every child wants, of course.
You're going through these photos and you're applying your current knowledge, you know, your lifetime knowledge.
Yeah.
Back to the image and remaking it in a way that says something more than just the snapshot.
That's right. That's very accurate.
So another one is called Outside the Safety Ring. Talking of hot lava, you've got the safety ring. Now, safety ring, what is that for young people?
Well, as I was looking at that image, and the image is a picture of my sister and I kind of wading, or almost posing. It looks like we're actually posing in the river. And there's an inner tube off to the right, which I have painted bright scarlet color. I am wearing what's called a safety ring.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a child, the thing you wear around your waist, you know, so that you don't drown mm-hmm. if you don't know how to swim yet. And when I remembered that title, it helped me work my way into that painting and figure out how I wanted to present that image. Mm-hmm. Being outside the safety ring. So both my sister and I, in that image, I guess, I think of us as being unprotected in a way. For me, as the younger girl there, I'm imitating my sister in this picture. You know, I'm kind of striking the same pose as my older sister. That was always a very dicey thing, copying. You know how children,
mm-hmm. yeah.
older siblings hate to be copied, and I was made ashamed of that. There are several layers of danger being referred to in that image.
Right. And was that the Columbia you're wading in?
I don't think it was. It wasn't a big river. It was a smaller river.
Okay.
Somewhere in the northwest, though.
But did you pay much attention to the landscape when you were painting it? Did you want it to feel northwesty, or was it really just a
No, I'd say that it was more of a, to reflect an inner state,
mm-hmm.
more of a dreamlike thing I was after.
Mm-hmm. And then there's a great one called Undertow, which is, again, kids in playing in the ocean.
Yeah.
Or playing water with waves. Is undertow an explicit metaphor in this case?
It is, in a way. That image is of my father and me.
Mm-hmm.
So he's there's a large...
headless.
He's headless. There's a large male figure, headless and a little bit stooped. And then the child is running kind of wildly. It looks like maybe away from him. And then the way I have depicted the ocean is partially abstract.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some darkness flowing through there.
I wouldn't say some darkness. I say a very large black presence in the middle of the painting.
Yeah, that's right.
Kind of a, you know, like house painter, black, solid mm-hmm. curve.
Yeah.
And then also something I wanted to mention is this white splotch in the middle of the painting, at the top,
right.
sort of in the sky
uh-huh.
or in the water. So you're really messing with the surface here. You're just sort of, you're not just presenting a family narrative. You're kind of, you know, really disrupting the surface.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Well, it is to bring, it's to explore my own feelings about these relationships, to bring... something that challenges the viewer to try to make sense. But I think these pictures are fairly emotionally evocative. There's a way you can think about them intellectually, but I think those elements provoke an emotional response first. When you asked before about the meaning of undertow, it's partially that my father was constantly running down to the waterline whenever we were at the beach and yelling at us to come in because of the undertow. You know, we were going to get sucked in by the undertow. We were out there delightedly playing, and he was always wrecking it by, you know, making us come in. But also there was the undertow of him. I almost titled it Undertow of a Jewish Intellectual, but then I thought that was a little too heavy. Because on the one hand, he provided stability in the family, but on the other... there is this overemphasis on the intellectual, which ignores at least half the person, if not more. That was confusing.
Mm-hmm. And that carried on beyond the age of a toddler.
It carried on for a very, very long time. I'm still working on it. I'm still trying to bring those two things together.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Ellen Goldschmidt. Her paintings... Hot Lava Family Pictures are on now at Blackfish Gallery through December the 30th. There's another watery picture called Still Wading.
Mm.
Is that a pun?
Maybe. This one is of my sister and me, and it's the only one in the show of us as adults.
Mm-hmm.
It's the last one I made in this series, and somehow it was important to me to bring the story round to the present, to bring those little girls into their current life. They're walking in a river, but this one happened to be in Italy, which is quite nice.
Because you go on vacation together.
Because we go on vacation together.
Well,
yeah,
good.
I want to make clear that my sister and I actually have a really strong relationship now. and have for a long time, and have really processed what went on between us. But we are still wading through what was our past. It never leaves us utterly, you know. And that's one of the things I wanted to do with this series, was to have people look at and think about how those whispers of childhood are still alive in them today. And we all have that.
Mm-hmm. It's two adult women with hats on wading in water. And you're the bigger of the two.
Right. Yes, in all the other pictures, I'm the small one, but I turned out to be quite a bit taller than my sister.
And you wanted to capture that at least once.
Maybe.
Technical knockout. Oh, no, there's another one called Puppetry.
Yeah.
Which is the same composition as the first Puppetry, but it's ink and charcoal on paper. It's big. And collage, so you sort of patched it up a little bit where you wanted to get the skin tone correct. Is that right?
Right. The collage elements, they're fairly limited, but it was, you know, when you're using ink on paper, you can't erase it. So if I decided, as I did at a certain point, that I needed to bring more light back into one of the figures, I couldn't erase the ink. So I just made patches of the right color and glued them on there to bring the light back on.
Right. Now, was it conceived to be a sketch and then you framed it, or did you want it to explore a different medium?
It was early on in the process, you know, when I was starting this. For the last maybe 4 or 5 years before I did this series of paintings, I had been focusing on drawing. So I was used to working in that format and that scale. So I decided to just try out this composition. And it's kind of a complicated composition, too, so I wanted to try it out. Normally, I don't do sketches before I make a painting, but if there's something I'm not sure how to quite realize it, then I will. So I guess it was like a mixture.
This is puppetry where the mom is holding you, and then the sister is holding your hand.
Right.
And
they're all
forward.
Kind of intertwined, and they're standing in a little wading pool.
Yeah.
Another watery one, as you said. I'll just mention this about it. Here I had decided to title the series Hot Lava, but then I started noticing that so many of the images that I had selected to work with had water in them. And I thought, well, wait a minute, I haven't titled. I think the way I make sense of that is that the water is almost an effort to cool the emotion or to somehow calm the feeling a little bit.
Mm-hmm. But they're images at play. It's kids playing in water.
Yeah.
Most of them, mm-hmm. Yeah. So in this second puppetry, it's very big, it's on paper, and then it's got this giant sort of pinkish, salmon pink sweeping mark across the top.
Right.
Or what is that? Is that another disruption that you, or is it a gesture from feeling? Where did it come from?
Well, it's kind of a few things. So I actually started that piece off with just free gestures of that pink ink and a couple colors of ink, I think. It's really kind of a way to get going and to just create, you know, the first layer to work on.
Oh, that's before you've drawn any people.
It is. And then I start to lay on the figures and then I'm trying to kind of work the figures in the background and make them work together. So it's at once, and then I've added to that pink some big charcoal dark swatches as well. It kind of references very abstractly the kind of garden setting, but it's really carries a lot more emotion and kind of the expressionistic effect. I don't know. It's also open to interpretation of the viewer because it's not anything precisely.
Mm-hmm.
It's more the way I've resolved the composition and then something that carries the mood of the piece, I think.
Mm-hmm. Most of the faces are quite rough. It's hard to see very closely what the expressions are. But then you get into these pictures of you drawing as a little girl. What, like two years old, maybe three?
Maybe three, I think.
Look like Shirley Temple with your curly hair. why did you suddenly focus in? Or were these done before and then you included them?
Boy, I'm trying to think of the chronology. I think the one of me drawing was a very early one. And before I really launched fully into the paintings, I was still kind of making my way through drawing into the subject matter. That one really stood out when I was looking through the photo albums because it's the only image of me as an artist, or mm-hmm. you know, drawing essentially.
Yeah.
In the whole collection, and so I thought that was interesting to explore the first appearance of the artist.
And you called it premonition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what is the girl drawing? There are some other pictures next to it called Implosion. And that is a sequence of a building, like a block of flats somewhere, being blown up. Right. So, you know, the original, the sort of halfway blown up, and then the sort of cloud of smoke and the rubble. Mm-hmm. And what was that building, and who was the architect?
That building is called Pruitt Igo. I pronounce it Igo. It's spelled I-G-O, that last bit. It is actually a whole development of buildings in St. Louis that were built around the time I was born, and they were designed by the architect who designed the World Trade Center, the two towers. I forget his name, but it's the same architect. They were housing development for low-income people. The reason I include that, and that's part of the show, is that when I first started looking at my relationship with my sister, actually the first time I ever did a piece about it was when I was in art school, so that's probably 16 years ago, 20 years ago, something like that. I somehow had this idea that the imagery of a building collapsing, or maybe a car being smashed, was kind of representative of the feeling that I had being in this relationship with this older sister that I felt early adulation for, as these pictures attest from the photo albums, and then was kind of slowly crushed by her because she so had to keep me down because I was, you know, the competitive sister. And it really, really, you know, penetrated me. So that image was, I kind of trolled the internet looking for the image that was most resonant with me, and the one of Pruitt Igo collapsing or being imploded was the one that represented it best for me. And then the reason I pronounced the word ego is because the collapse of the ego is just too perfect.
Is the girl drawing, is she drawing anything recognizable?
She's drawing that building collapsing. Mm. So I'm kind of collapsing myself as an adult, understanding what it was like to be that little girl. And the little girl, of course, she wasn't drawing that. She was making scribbles in the actual picture. But
you're saying an artist can take a vague feeling and then translate it into an image.
Yeah. Yes, I guess. And image. The notion that I just love the idea that she could foresee, you know, somehow.
There is another one called Lava Land. It's you two, the girls, in front of a fire, sitting on a floor, and there's a dog, like, on his back. It looks like a greyhound, like a skinny dog.
Right.
Where did the dog come from?
So the dog, the image of the dog, and we never had a dog. We had cats growing up. But the dog, and actually the gestures of the girls in that piece, come from the casts of victims of the Pompeii, earthquake, the Vesuvius eruption.
Yeah.
When I came up with, started thinking about the series as being titled Lava Land, then that led me to revisit those images of those, which are just so gripping, of those figures caught in the eruption, and I decided to try to integrate that.
Mm-hmm. So you make the girls look like these people who suffocated in the ash from Vesuvius, and the dog as well. Well, like, who's suffocating? Like, why? Why poor little girls dead in front of the fire?
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking the girls look a little either just burdened or frightened, and the dog is kind of in his death throe. It just kind of referencing what we go through, you know, just growing up. One thing I really do want to make clear, and it's really important, is that there was no overt abuse or scandal or anything in my family. It was a pretty regular family, and that was part of the trauma. My mother wanted us to be the most exceptional, the most perfect family there was. So there was the lack of acknowledgement of some reality of what living in that family could be like. And she was very explosive, but there was also love, and it wasn't a hideous, hideous picture altogether. But I think it's really important to face up to the reality of your family life, and that includes some of the trauma. I wanted to affirm that for myself. It's been helpful to me to do that, and I think that in my friendships and the people I know, the more that I see them able to do that, it's helpful as well.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Ellen Goldschmidt. Her show, Hot Lava Family Pictures, is on now at Blackfish Gallery on 420 Northwest 9th Avenue through December the 30th. Thanks very much for coming to KBOO, Ellen.
Thank you, Joseph. I really enjoyed it.
Be a standing cinema. Dress my friends up just for show. See them as they really are. Put your people in my brain. Two new pens to have a go. I'd like to be a gallery. Put you all inside my show. Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol's silver screen can't tell him apart at all. Andy walking, Andy tired. Andy take a little snooze. I tie him up when he's fast asleep. Send him on a pleasant cruise. When he wake up on the sea, he's sure to think of me and you. Think about paint and he'll think about glue. What a jolly boring thing to do. Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Oh, oh, oh. Andy Warhol's silver screen can't tell him apart at all. Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol's silver screen can't tell him apart at all.
Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. The December 18th meeting of the Board of Directors will be held at 6 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/board-directors.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Beautiful Party on Thursday, December 14th at 6 p.m. at The Know in Portland. The Beautiful Party is a video premiere hip-hop birthday event. There will also be performances, samples, and other surprises at this 21 and over event. Again, that's The Beautiful Party on Thursday, December 14th at 6 p.m. at The Know, 3728 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Help Drive with Big Water on Saturday, December 16th at 8 p.m. at the Portway Tavern in Portland. Local singer-songwriter Big Water will perform Americana roots rock and gather food, socks, blankets, and hygiene supplies for those in the community who are in need. Again, that's the Help Drive with Big Water on Saturday, December 16th at 8 p.m. at the Portway Tavern, 7600 North Willamette Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 12 o'clock. Good afternoon, KBOO listeners. We're just listening to a little John Coltrane. It's entitled Impressions, and it's from his CD Live at the Village Vanguard, The Master Takes. Up next, Tanya Gomez-Daza brings us Buscando America. That's from noon until 1:30. Then from 1:30 to 2:30, we have Fa Radio. From 2:30 to 4, we have Radio Tonale. We'll have 4 full hours of Spanish language programming coming up for you, so stick around for that. And then later in the day, we have Democracy Now!, and we're always happy to bring you that. And in addition to that, our independently produced weekday KBOO News. So thank you for your support. For those of you who have not donated, you can still do that, because KBOO keeps you informed, and we know you want to get involved. There's ways to volunteer. Come on down here or pick up the phone and give us a call. But very importantly right now,